On February 9th of 2004, 21-year-old UMass student Maura Murray drove from her dorm in Amherst, Massachusetts to the White Mountains of New Hampshire.
At approximately 7:27 p.m., Maura spun out her 1996 Saturn on a hairpin turn on Route 112 in North Haverhill. There has never been a credible sighting of Maura since.
Maura is 5'7" tall. She weighs 120 pounds, and she has brown hair and hazel eyes.
If you have any information regarding Maura's disappearance, please submit it to us, the Murray family, through their Facebook page, or the New Hampshire State Police Cold Case Unit.
This is Missing Maura Murray. Welcome back to the Missing Maura Murray podcast. I'm Tim, here today alone in the Crawl Space Studios, but don't fret, Lance will be back soon. He is not a part of this interview, however. The interview is with me and new friend Jenny Carreri, whose twin sister, identical twin sister, was murdered March 2nd, 1996 in the Baltimore area. And so I know this episode does not have anything to do with Maura Murray, but as noted in previous episodes, we are branching out a little bit more, and we hope you're still along for the ride with us. Before we play the interview, I got to mention Stitcher Premium. Check it out at stitcherpremium.com. Our entire archive is there in case you're wondering where the early episodes are. And check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/crawlspacepodcast. We are doing new content every week. And you may have noticed the social media pages, Private Investigations for the Missing out there. Please make sure to give them a follow. That is Bruce Maitland, of course, Brianna Maitland's father. Bruce Maitland's nonprofit that Lance and I are on the board of. And our friends Michelle and Jillian are killing it on the newsletter and on social media. So big thanks to Michelle and Jillian. Okay, so this is an interview with Jenny Carreri. Her twin sister, Jody LeCornu, was murdered in March of 1996. She is looking for, and actually it sounds like at the end of this episode, kind of in desperate need of a private investigator near her, and she's still in the Maryland area. So if you are a private investigator, please reach out to her, and maybe you have a little time, you're licensed, and you're able to work cheaply or pro bono on this. Email Jenny at jcarreri, it's like carrier with an I afterwards, at goeaston.net. The email address is in the show notes as well. And also want to let you know there is a reward for arrest and conviction in this case, the unsolved murder of Jenny's sister, Jody LeCornu. And if the name sounds familiar, our friends over at True Crime Twins did an episode with Jenny just a couple months ago, so you might want to check that out. It's Chloe and Melina. They're identical twins as well, so there's kind of a connection there. Okay, everyone, thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy this. Welcome to Crawl Space, Jenny Carreri. How are you today, Jenny?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well here in the Crawl Space Studios in Wormtown, though I am alone. But that's okay. We're talking about your twin sister Jody, and she was murdered back in 1996. I just want to take it back to you and Jody growing up, and what was it like? Because you guys are identical twins, right?
Correct. Yeah. Identical twins. We were always together. I mean, we were pretty much known as one person. You know, we were known as the twins, and you know, we always shared classes and friends, and we always had the same room, and just spent pretty much every minute together. And it was great. You know, it was just like you have your best friend, companion, sister around all the time.
And there seems to be a wide spectrum of how identical twins kind of behave together or their relationships. Because I have cousins who are identical twins, and they are just they don't like each other still, and they're like 30 now.
They don't?
No.
Oh my gosh.
We always thought they would come back around. You know, it was just like a childhood thing. But no, they still like they tolerate each other. But that's kind of it. But then there's Chloe and Melina, who are tight, and I've seen them argue, and it's actually quite adorable. But then they, you know, they're fine, like 5 minutes later.
Right.
So what were you and Jody like?
I mean, we definitely would have little, you know, issues, but, you know, it didn't last very long whatsoever.
Yeah.
I mean, we were different. Our personalities were different. I was the quiet, shy one, and she was the outgoing one. They called me, you probably heard this, Jenny the Wimp.
I was offended by that.
You were?
Yeah.
I was too. I know.
Who would call you a wimp?
Just like my family. It just kind of became my nickname because I just was very, just this, you know, shy person. And she was definitely more, I felt more confident around her, you know, always. I mean, she was, you know, more talkative and just always, you know, people called her the life of the party, you know, as we got older. I mean, I was just very, but, you know, as I got older, I kind of came out of my own, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Got a little, I mean, and more basically with dealing with justice for her has brought me to be sort of the type of person she was, you know, strong and out there. And it's like I became her almost, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So it sounds like you kind of fed off her energy as a young child when you guys were together. It sounded like you were a little more brave, a little bit more talkative. And then later in your life, when you guys became adults, you were still kind of a little quiet when you guys were separate. Is that accurate?
Yes, definitely. Jody and I, when we were growing up, struggled with alcoholism and addiction and eating disorders. We really struggled a lot, and, you know, at a young age. And so that's, you know, it had run in our family as well. And so that's ultimately what separated us when my parents put us in treatment when we were 17, about to graduate from high school. And so that was the first time that we were ever separated, when we were in there, and they took us away from each other there. And it was just devastating. We got out of there at different times, and I had decided, well, my parents actually took me away to Wyoming. My relatives had retired out in Jackson Hole before everybody knew about Jackson Hole. And so my mother was going out there because sadly her brother was dying, and they didn't like that I was dating the staff member of the rehab. So they like kidnapped me to Wyoming and put me on a dude ranch.
Okay,
and and then Jody had already run away from the treatment and was living in Baltimore with friends. And unfortunately she started drinking again. And so I had stayed out, and I was in Wyoming, and just decided that I really wanted to get my life together and just not drink. And so, you know, we had started like in elementary school, we were putting my father in rehab. So we had just like seen so much even before Jody and I started. And I just thought, you know, I really want to change my life. And so, so my choice then after that was to go, I convinced my parents to let me move to California. And that's where I said I would go to school and work. And, but, you know, we still were in touch. I was afraid if I came back that I would just go down the same path again, you know. And I look back and it's, I mean, that was just how we got separated. And, but, you know, we had the landline phone, you know, not when I was on the dude ranch, but, you know, when I was out in California, we racked up lots of debt with talking on the phone, and I had no concept of money and credit cards. I would just put a ticket on my credit card and fly home and see her. And so, I mean, you know, it was when I could. And so we still were very close, but on different parts of the country. And
sure.
So, but she ended up living with her boyfriend, and then I got engaged and out there. And so we continued to be separate, and she continued to struggle. You know, she and her boyfriend struggled with drinking, and, you know, she struggled to a lot of anxiety and you know, she was really afraid to live in Baltimore. It was ironic because she used to tell us she was afraid she was going to get shot.
Yeah.
And, but she, you know, she was working and going to school. And so she was there for a couple years, you know, living with her boyfriend. She was with her boyfriend, you know, they've been together. He was a lot older than her, mm-hmm. about 4 or 5 years when she died. They, you know, she, he was the one that had told her not to come home. They got into a fight that night.
And so it sounds like she was kind of self-medicating because of her anxiety with alcohol. Yeah. And when you visited her, was that, was she still drinking heavily?
Yeah. I mean, the thing about it was, is, I mean, she, it was very sad. I mean, she was in her early 20s and, I mean, I'd see little bottles in her purse. I mean, it was like she was maintaining. It's not like she was like falling down. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
It was like she was just sort of maintaining this numbness, I guess. And, you know, and I know for her with that, I mean, we both struggled with severe anxiety and I ended up medicating myself with pills out there for a while. And so it's just, it's a terrible, horrible existence. I mean, I still struggle with the anxiety, but I don't take anything. Yeah. I mean, I don't numb myself, you know, even though there's times where I feel like I want to.
Yeah.
So, but you know, that's the thing with that, that alcohol, it's just a vicious cycle. Cause it just makes it worse. And, you know, it just, you never get, it's just like, you never get out of it. And, so yeah, like I said, she wasn't, not like she was just falling over, but just sort of, like I said, maintain like this drinking to, I mean, cause she just, it was sad. I mean, she was such a, just such a wonderful, kind person and just struggled like internally. And I hated to see it, you know?
Now it seems like by all accounts, she was a lot of fun and everyone really loved hanging out with her and talking with her. But where do you think that anxiety came from?
I mean, it's interesting. We both struggled with it. I mean, starting in our 20s and I don't know, you know, my father struggled severely with depression, you know, and, you know, they say they're sort of intertwined or whatever.
Sure.
So I don't know if it's, you know, genetics. It's hard to say. And she probably still would be, I mean, like I said, I still struggle. I still have, I mean, I had severe panic attacks. I mean, I would just like wake up and like have a panic attack. I mean, it's horrible.
After, after Jody was killed?
Well,
or
this
before?
Was before.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
Like, I mean, but I still have them, you know, I mean, it's like, it keeps me away from a lot of, I mean, it keeps me from doing a lot of things in my life because I get so anxious and the depression, you know, suffer with the depression too. It's just, it's so how it, I don't know. Genetics, circumstances, I guess maybe growing up, I, you know, maybe getting involved when we were younger, early with alcohol and drugs. I mean, we, you know, we were both sexually abused as children. You know, I mean, there was just like a lot that happened. So it's, it's hard to like pinpoint. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm open about all this stuff now because I hid it for so long. And I just, you know, it's just, it's really important for me to talk about addiction and, you know, being abused and, because it's so prevalent and, you know, I have children now and I talk with them a lot about life and real things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cause nobody talked about, you know, we were always hiding everything. You know, we put my dad in rehab. We were in sixth grade and we had to like not tell him, like we had to lie about it. You know, I mean, we were always lying about everything. I mean, so everything was like always hidden growing up, but not to say, I mean, I had the best parents ever, you know, it's just that like some of us people have struggles, you know, and
sure. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people listening can relate to having anxiety for sure. And is it therapeutic, I guess, to talk about now? Like, does it, do you have less anxiety in your life now?
You know, it's off and on. It's, I mean, I'm trying to find ways to cope. I mean, over the last couple of years, there's been a really, I've had a lot of really tough times with, I've really just put every part of me into Jody's case and it's caused major problems in my marriage and stress on the children. And I mean, I guess more so the problems in the marriage causes the stress, you know, it's just, sure. It's just been like a lot of stress. And, you know, and I try to be a good mom and, you know, but it's hard with having lost Jody. I mean, I didn't deal with it for so long. I just sort of, I couldn't deal with it, you know? Right. I mean, I just could not deal with that for years. I couldn't even be alone in a room by myself. I mean, I ended up, you know, I was engaged and came home and I was 23 and, you know, my parents had separate bedrooms. I was like sleeping with my mother. I was 23. Like I was a basket case. Hmm. Like I could not function for the longest time, you know, and then my father got sick with cancer. So we were taking care of him for a couple of years and, you know, and then he died and it was just like another just devastating time. And so it's just like, it's just easier to kind of live your life, just not just kind of going through the motions. And that's what I've done. I get emotional talking about it, just sort of like how I've lived my life, you know? And, yeah. And now, like, as far as there's been periods that I've with, you know, I feel with my, I call it battle with the Baltimore County Police, trying to get records, trying to, you know, we had the lawsuit, yep. You know, my family's put a ton of money in everything we've been doing. And I mean, and I've gotten severely depressed where I just was, I mean, it was a couple of weeks ago and I was driving down the road. It was like a 2-lane road. And I was like, please somebody hit me. Wow. Like, I mean, I just, yeah, I mean, it's horrible. It's horrible. And I'm like, I've got 3 children.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah. You seem like a great mom. We follow each other on social media and you seem,
I'm a little impulsive.
Yeah.
I gotta watch it. I love my kids.
Tough as nails. Yeah. Please hang in there.
Thank you.
We need you.
Thank you.
If there's something that you could tell your younger self now, what would it be?
Wow. Oh my God.
It sounds like you were going through, you know, and it sounds like your life has been mostly tumultuous, but that period especially, I mean, what can you even do? I mean, you completely had no shot at a normal life at that time. So, looking back,
it was so really messed up, you know, yeah. With the drinking and starting to get into drugs. And I've been sober over 20 years now, which is amazing.
Congratulations. Yeah.
So what would I tell myself? Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. Let me think about that for a minute. Okay. Like, I'm thinking of like different angle, like what, I mean, my first thought was like, you know, live in the moment or, you know, I mean, but I kind of did that, you know, cause mm-hmm. I was like, just had no fear of like consequences that we both didn't. God, I mean, you know, I look back at my life and, you know, I look at people like my friends that are lawyers and veterinarians and I feel like a lot of times I really beat myself up. God, like I'll start to tell myself you're such a failure. Like, what did you do with your life? You know, and I finally did get my degree. I finally went to college, but I just feel like I wish, like I was laying in bed the other night and I was like, I think I want to go to law school, you know, like, I just feel like I haven't done anything with my life. So I feel like I constantly like battle with myself. Like, you're not a failure. You're not a failure. Like I want to, you know, I don't feel smart. And, God, what could I tell myself? Like, get your shit together, get your shit together. Like, you know, if I could change something, you know, I wish I would have, you know, gone to college and had a career and, you know, I guess maybe like taking more time, you know, I jumped into getting married and as a little girl, you're saying. Is that what you're saying? I'm sorry. I'm all over the map.
No,
I got
okay.
ADD too. I got ADD.
I guess I meant like if you were to look back at that time around 1996 now and you could tell yourself, you know, 1996 Jenny, something that would help her these next, you know, years.
Oh my gosh. You know, the one thing that I look back is that I wish I was involved in her case. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. Like, I wish I had been able to get, was involved in her. I mean, that's what I'm thinking, like, because I wasn't and I couldn't.
Yeah. I'm curious. It's pretty well documented out there that you were inspired by the movie 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Came out a few years ago, because you yourself have launched a billboard campaign very much like the character in that movie.
I'm addicted to billboards, and I don't have any more money to do another one, but I'm trying to figure out how to do another one.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you.
Yeah.
Yeah, how do you afford them?
Okay, so my mother and me, I mean, you know, we've just put sort of everything, you know, any extra bit, you know, we're by far not rich. We were struggling, but, you know, we've put a lot of money, you know, with the attorney's fees. It was almost $20,000, the billboards. I did have, which was nice, my last two billboards, I had two people donate them, which was amazing. One
That's from great.
Growing up donated one of the billboard, a guy that I grew up with, and then a random, unbelievable, kind person from out west just said she wanted to donate. Yeah, so the last two, yeah, that were donated. And it's incredible. I mean, it really brought a lot of attention to her story. And what is the line from the movie? It's one of my favorite lines. The more you keep the case in the public eye, the better chances you are of having it get solved.
That's right. And,
what the is going on with these billboards, Mildred?
Kind of self-explanatory, ain't it?
Well, why don't you just explain it to me?
Guess it ain't self-explanatory then. Well, you know, I guess I wanted certain people's minds kept on certain people's jobs is all. I hadn't heard a word from them in 7 goddamn months. I'll tell you this, I've heard an awful lot from them since I put them billboards up.
You think this has focused their minds? I'll tell you what it's focused their minds on. It's focused their minds on how exactly are they gonna fuck you up.
The more you keep a case in the public eye, the better your chances are getting it solved. It's in all the guidebooks, Charlie.
How much these billboards cost?
About the same as a tractor trailer.
And I mean, I'm constantly trying to figure out, you know, and I'm not very good. I want to be Sarah Turney. Like, I'm so inspired by her. Like, I want to be her. I want to, like, follow her around. Like, she's such an inspiration to me because, like, I have no clue. Like, I just got on Instagram a couple months ago and I'm like, this is so much work. Like, I'm not really good with social media. Like, I'm emotional and I'm impulsive and I just, like, spat things out there and then I'm like, oh my God.
But you're doing it. That's the most important thing. You're out there.
Yeah.
You're there occasionally. Maybe, you know, there are days obviously, and maybe even weeks that, you know, you struggle to sign in or and post things, but
I get
the fact that you're
my
there.
My low places that I'm like, oh, I can't do this. And then I struggle with like what to say. I'm like, I don't know what to say. And then, you know, I feel like, oh my God, these people are going to stop following me because they're going to be tired of hearing all this stuff. But it's like, I just, you know, I just want to keep it out there. And so it's like, you know, and so somebody recommended, I don't know if you saw the petition, recommended the petition. And, so I mean, like I said, somebody recommends something and I just do it. I was like, okay, I'll do it. And I literally like just, you know, banged it out. Like, and I don't like, I don't put thought, you know, I mean, I do, but it's like, okay, I want to get this done. So I'm sure I had some guy reach out to me. He's like a marketing guy. He's like, if you want help and you know, I'll help you put some stuff out there. And I was like, I mean, I'm just so, maybe I should like slow down, but I'm just like, no, I want to get it done.
Well,
he's like, I'll help you.
Well, that's nice. What is the petition for? Officially,
we put this petition out there and I bring it to the I have the pro bono lawyers now because the police don't talk, they're ignoring me. Bring it through to the police department, to the maybe the governor's office. I mean, that's what people are saying, is if you have a petition that it can kind of get you some leeway.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I've already met with the governor's office. I've met with the county executive. I've met with all these people who, you know, the governor's office even put out to the media that they were going to help me. I think even before I met them, or maybe it was after I met them, but you know, nobody's done anything. I mean, I've asked for the detective to be off the case. I've asked for the DNA testing to be done. And those are like two big things.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I'm trying to not, you know, I'm not trying to be negative about the detective. It's just that I honestly, I mean, just because I have put years into following what he's done. I've done my own investigation. I've met with people. I've been corresponding with a prisoner that's involved. I mean, that I think is involved.
Oh.
I mean, and I'll tell you about that. Yeah. I mean, so I've done and followed through with people that he said he had interviewed. And there's just been a lot of things that haven't happened and contradictions and most importantly, a fresh pair of eyes, you know.
Sure.
I mean, it's just, come on. It's, I just feel like her case could be solved.
Yeah. There are so many eyewitnesses. It's kind of remarkable.
Six
right. eyewitnesses. Yeah, six. And do they all say a pretty similar thing?
That's what they tell us. I mean, I want to get to those witnesses, but okay. they won't, you know, they won't give us that information.
Yeah. And I want to get to that night. But I'm curious, what happened? Like, what were you doing? Because there was this switch, I think, that happened in your life. And I think that movie might have been the start of it. But what was going on before then?
You know, I would, you know, it was like after my father died, my dad was a prosecutor. So he prosecuted drug and violent crime cases. I don't know if you knew that.
No.
In another county. And after he died, you know, I found, you know, in his room, there was all this stuff under his bed. And it was just, you know, all the newspaper clippings and notes and just everything, you know, that he had saved for Jody's case. And I just really started communicating with the detective. And I mean, I didn't know. I just thought we had to sit and wait for the police. You know what I mean? I didn't
Sure.
know that I could do anything. And that's when I just really started to contact them and be like, what's going on? And just trying to get all the information I could and reaching out, you know, to different, you know, in Baltimore, I'd reach out to the news stations on the anniversary and just, you know, try to get them. I mean, I was so shy for me to call a news station. It was like really hard for me, but now I'm just like, you know, I just call them like, this is Jenny Curry. I'm putting this billboard up. So, I mean, so it's before it was just, you know, it was like a big deal. So it was like a slow process. And I did the Crime Watch Daily show.
Yep.
They came out, they reached out to me. And so I just started to do things and I met a private investigator and he said, you know, you should try to get her records. And I was like, what? And, you know, I just didn't know. So that's kind of how everything started with my lawsuit.
Yeah.
And filing the Maryland Public Information Act. And that was just really hard, you know.
And how did that go? Were you able to get...
Horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, the police would file these like 90-something page motions to quash and all. Yeah, I don't even understand all this legal stuff. And my lawyer, I mean, he's amazing, but he just like would let them have it. And it was very bitter and horrible. And you know, it's not that I wanted it to get that way, but it's, you just get so angry and just that they just were fighting and they would get, you know, the lawyer, we had a couple of hearings and their lawyer who was just incredibly nasty to me. And I like, I'm such a nice person. I would like send her flowers and, you know, but then after she was mean to me more than once, I was like, she would get in my face and she's like, you're ruining your sister's case,
Ugh.
You know, by being out, you know, doing like podcasts and things. And I was like, well, you know, somebody's got to do something, you know?
Right.
And
sorry,
so,
it's inconvenient,
I mean,
for you.
Right. Right. I mean, she would literally scream at me. And so at one point I was asking a question about something that I didn't understand. And she just looked at me. We were having a meeting with the detective and his boss, and she started yelling at me again, and I just like I lost it. Like I had, she's like, well, you, because they were supposed to be meeting with me, and it took me like 6 months to have a meeting with them. This was after the lawsuit. Like they basically, like, we had to come to an agreement, which is ridiculous. Like they wanted me to shut up, go away. And then, you know, basically they were going to be working on her case again, as basically if I were to go away and not criticize them. So we were supposed to have this meeting, which took months upon months upon months. So I would just email her like, hey there, don't forget about me, you know? And, you know, 'cause I wanted an update. And
yeah, that's great.
So she's yelling at me in the meeting and I slammed my phone down. I'm surprised it didn't break. And she said, you just keep emailing me. And I said, I'll never email you again. And she like grabbed her stuff and stormed out of the room. And I'm just like bawling, hysterical. And so she was my contact with the police. So I wasn't allowed to talk to the police because of the lawsuit. So here I am sitting there with the detective and his boss and crying and they're just, you know, and that was right before I was going to put up the billboard and, you know, and you know, they recommended that I not do it.
Yeah.
And so So, you know, they're like, you know, you just need to take care of yourself and we're doing everything we can. And I was like, well, that's not helping me any because that's not true. And so that it was, so yeah, so the lawsuit was just how all, every part of it.
Okay.
You know, and it, not, we got nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Right.
Other than now I can't talk to the police.
Ugh. And yeah. And the petition is kind of to show how many people care about this case and how many people are supporting you. And look, we're not going anywhere.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Great. So everyone yes. who's listening needs to sign the petition. Please
yes.
click the link please. In the show notes. Sign the petition for Jenny.
Yes, yes. I'll send you the link to it because I'm at, I think, over 700.
Okay, and great. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsor. Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program. So let's get to March 2nd, 1996, and you were in California when this happened?
Yes.
Okay.
It was actually my parents' wedding anniversary.
Oh, my gosh.
I was in California. So the Thursday night, you know, Jody had tried a couple times to stop drinking. She and her boyfriend both. Like I said, drank. He wanted her to be at home and drink and with him, but she liked to go to this local tavern. And so she called from, do they still have payphones around? I don't even know. She called from a
really.
Payphone
yeah.
at the bar.
Yep.
And so he was pissed that she was there because he knew that she was there. And that Thursday night, so that she came home. And then that Friday morning, he got up and they had a fight and he said, don't come home. For the weekend, you know, don't come home.
Why didn't he like to go to that bar?
I don't know. You know, the other thing is she kind of had a crush on the owner of the bar and she had her friends there. I just think she was very comfortable there. It was close to her house. And, you know, some people like the bar. You know, my father was one that drank alone. You know, some people like to be alone. Some people like to be... You know what I mean?
Surrounded by people, yeah.
Boyfriend just, yeah, he did not want her hanging out there.
Was it because of the bar owner and maybe some jealousy?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why he didn't want her there, but he didn't want her there.
Okay.
So that was what upset him, is that she was there that night. And I think actually she had put some time together that she was sober and had started drinking again, and that I upset him too.
Okay.
But you know, he was still drinking. So
yeah, but he wanted her to do it.
He
at
wanted
home,
her to stop.
Whether it was to be safer perhaps, or whether it had something to do with the bar owner, we're not really sure right now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Correct.
Did she spend time with this bar owner outside the bar?
Not that I ever knew of.
Okay.
No. Not, but you know, like I said, not that I don't think so, but I know she liked to go there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it was more than that. I think it was just, she just liked the place and, you know, she was friendly with the bartenders. And so, you know, people knew her there. And,
sure.
The next morning she was working at Eastern Savings Bank in Baltimore. And so he told her, he left, told her not to come home. I think he told her she should go to my parents in Annapolis, but she ended up going to work and then going to the Mount Washington Tavern with two of her friends. That was the name of the bar, and stayed there until almost close. And then it's just, the whole night is so odd because she had, I mean, everybody loved her. I mean, she was so kind. And I mean, she would have a place to go. For her not to have a plan to go somewhere, and even I think about it even later on, for her to not, even though we told her not to go home, I mean, they've been together all this time.
Yeah, she's
I don't
still
know.
There.
Like, would she not have, like, really not have not gone home? I don't know. I mean, even though we told her not to, was it that? Does that, you know, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, she still lived there. She shared the residence. She had every right to be there. But I guess the question is how bad was their argument? Like, what, do you know what they were arguing over? It was just drinking mostly, or
well, he was mad that she had been at the bar the night before.
Okay, so it was it something like that they might break up over, or it was just kind of like a long-term relationship, a couple of day spat?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I had never heard of anything like this happening, of him telling her not to come home. So it's just, there's, you know, he never told us more to what was going on. I mean, this is all that we've gotten.
Yeah, but you eventually spoke to him, right?
So after we spoke with him, and he was, you know, staying with my parents, and we were in Annapolis and drinking a lot. And so it was almost like he was very attached to me. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, it was like being like I was Jody.
Yeah,
does that make
sure.
sense?
So, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, so he was with us for a little while, and then we didn't, and then we just kind of separate. Like, we didn't talk to him for like 17 years.
Yeah.
It just kind of happened. He got married and had kids, and then I reached out to him when I did the Crime Watch Daily show, and, you know, he sort of wanted to separate from it all, not, you know, because of his family, and it's like he doesn't want to be associated with it, but he did agree to do the show, but he wanted to cover his face.
Yeah.
They did not use, I don't believe that they actually used his part in the show. But that's like basically that all we got from him. So she was at the bar, and she was asked to bring one of the employees home. He was the janitor, or, you know, he cleaned the floors, cleaned up, and he didn't speak well. There was something going on with him, but I'm not sure what it was. And she would have done anything for anybody, but late at night, to just, I'd never heard of him, her driving him home.
What time was this?
It was like 1 something.
And how late do these bars stay open till in the Baltimore area?
I'm thinking close to 1:30, 1:45.
Okay. So this was right around closing, a little bit before. Who asked her to take him home?
One of the employees there. And I'm not sure exactly who it was, but that just, I mean, like I said, starting with that, everything was odd. So apparently, and it was snowing, and she was terrified of driving in the snow. She was terrified of living in Baltimore. I mean, she was afraid of her closet. That's how afraid she was. And so for her to drive him home, and then she stopped at a liquor store and bought a 6-pack of beer, which was, makes us think, was she going to meet somebody? And then she goes to sit in this dark parking lot, which is about a minute from her house.
Okay. So it sounds like she was considering going home at that point, and maybe weighing her options after buying that 6-pack.
Going to sit in that parking lot.
Yeah, and then it sounded like she was so close to home. It sounds like she was weighing whether or not to drive back home.
But still, just to sit there is just, I mean, for a young woman to do that is so odd. You know what I mean?
Because she sat there for, it was like 45 minutes or something like that?
At least an hour and a half.
Oh.
It was like, at least, because I think she got there, well, let's see. So she died at 3:41. I'm assuming she got to the parking lot like a little bit after 2. And so she sat there, and she's in this one, she's on this one side of York Road, which is four or five lanes in the Caldor parking lot, which is now the Drumcastle Center government buildings. And she made a couple phone calls. She called back to the bar, and there's different, I've heard different stories about what she was calling back for. She talked to the manager, who I just learned several years ago that, I don't know, maybe 7 years later, he had committed suicide, because I was trying to reach out to him.
Yeah.
You know, when I'd find out information. And she called her old roommate, and the old roommate had moved in with her boyfriend, and talked to the boyfriend and had a couple, you know, 2.5 minute conversation with him. Those are the only 2 calls that they told us about. I believe she might have talked to 2 people at the bar.
At the bar?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And she didn't talk to the bar owner?
No.
Okay.
So I've heard she was looking for him. I've heard she was looking for a party. Then I heard she was looking for drugs. So there's just different things that I've heard that, you know, there was no drugs in her system.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that she and I didn't get into them when we were younger, but it really wasn't her thing as she got older. And
yeah.
Alcohol was her drug of choice.
I can see that. So to your knowledge, she wasn't on drugs or had been taking drugs at that point in her life?
Yeah, I mean, did she feel like it was the worst day of her life and she and her boyfriend got into a fight and what is she going to do? And she's upset, like maybe go do something. I mean, I've certainly had those thoughts where I'm like, you know, I see why people shoot up heroin because they can't take it anymore. So did something like that happen? Possibly, you know, that she was like, you know, but people say the bar was just known for drugs. Like, why not get the drugs there? Why go wait 5 hours and sit in a parking lot and in a dark parking lot and meet some stranger, right? It just, so that's odd to me. But, it, you know, I haven't ruled that out. I mean.
Okay. And now tell me a little bit about the call that she placed to her roommate's boyfriend.
Correct. Yes. So that was just odd. You know,
this was someone else who was living with Jody and her boyfriend or a previous roommate.
So this girl, Jody, moved in with her at some point. They waitressed together.
Okay.
And because the girl, I think she became homeless or something. And that was just Jody. She was helping people. And but then the girl ended up. Jody and I'm just leaving the names out.
Sure.
But Jody and the girl and the boyfriend all worked at one point. They worked together in a restaurant and the girl ended up moving in with her boyfriend. So Jody called their place and talked to the boyfriend.
Okay. And we don't know what that conversation was about.
No. And that's still something that has not sat well with me for 23 years.
Yeah. How well did she know that guy?
How well to have the police investigated it is most important.
Yeah.
It's the problem I have with it.
Sure. Yeah. It does sound certainly peculiar if they didn't have that kind of relationship. But I would say that both of those calls seemed pretty peculiar because
they know where she is.
Well, and they were also she called the bar after it was closed. Am I correct that in that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So she was looking for an employee. If she called after it was closed, or yeah,
employee right. Drugs, we don't know.
Right. But she asked to talk to the bar manager or the bar owner.
That was one of the stories I'd heard. Yeah.
Okay. Was he known to like sell drugs at the bar?
No. I mean, he was a good guy. I mean, he was really he was not into that, but I'm saying that it was in the bar, that it was known that it was in the bar. But I mean, I think he didn't want it and tried not to have it there.
Okay. Yeah. So she probably wasn't calling him for that reason.
She might have just been calling him to say, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I only know her side of it, you know, that when I would come visit, that she was fond of him, you know?
Yeah. Was he married or in a relationship or anything like that?
Yes, he was married.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think there's any chance they were having an affair?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, did something happen at some point? I mean, I don't know that I'd 100% say I don't think so, but I wouldn't say there was an affair going on.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely some interesting pieces about that would lead me to, you know, that's why I asked the question, because the phone calls, him being married, her boyfriend, perhaps,
yes.
We don't know, but perhaps being jealous of their friendship, but we don't know that to be true.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I could easily see how that could lead to a fight or even, like, the potential of ending a relationship, you know,
mm-hmm.
if she's a bit flirty
mm-hmm.
maybe with someone at the bar or something.
Right.
Then she's sitting in her car and
mm-hmm.
And we're not exactly sure why she's been sitting there for as long as she was. Was she drinking the six pack?
I believe one of them had been drinking. I believe one of them had been drinking.
Okay.
And they said her window was rolled down, which is odd because it was snowing.
Okay. So, and then she was approached.
Yes. So she was approached by an African-American in a white BMW. And so parallel to where she was a 24-hour gas station. And let's see, like on the same side of the street where she was the 24-hour gas station. They're the ones that I believe called 911 with the gunshot when they heard the gunshot. So what, and then across these four or five lanes was a huge center with a 24-hour Giant. A Boston Market right at the entrance of the parking lot, a tire place, and there was more witnesses down there at the Boston Market at the entrance.
Was it
they
open
were unloading
still?
A truck with chicken.
Oh, okay. So they were getting a delivery at that early mm-hmm. in the morning. It wasn't open. What places were open? Just that gas station?
And the gas station and the 24-hour Giant. And I don't know what else would have been open then.
And what's a Giant? I'm unfamiliar.
It's a grocery store. It's a 24-hour grocery store.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was, you know, so it was lit up. But there apparently, we were told by the police that this, so Jody ended up over in that parking lot after she was shot. But the security cameras, the police told us, were not working that night at the Giant. So witnesses saw this male African-American approach her in the white BMW and said there was some sort of communication, and somehow she was shot from behind, you know, went through the back of the car into the seat, the back door behind her into the seat, and severed her spine. And that's just been hard for us to understand, because they said, you know, her spine was severed. That's what killed her. But she was able to, it wasn't just a straight shot out of that parking lot. She was had to
turn the wheel.
Wiggle out of there, drive across the four lanes. She drove into the other parking lot and drove, it's a big lot, and drove a huge circle around the lot. And he followed her and stayed at the entrance of the lot, you know, I call it like the top of the lot, and just watched her.
Wow.
And at some point she stopped. I'm assuming she hit a curb. I mean, just the car stopped. And with the witnesses there, he drove up to her. And what the police tell me is that he reached in the window over her body and put her car in park and took something out of her car. All very slowly, not in a hurry, just got back in his car and just kept moving. I mean, you know, just slow, like took a right on York Road.
Yeah. What did he take out of her car?
Well, they would never tell us, but they said her purse was missing.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're like, we can't tell you, but her purse was, you know.
Yeah. What year was this BMW? Or I guess my a better question probably is, was this like a newer BMW, or was this like a one that was 15 years old or something?
You know, it probably, God, I can send you a picture of, like, they have a picture of it. You know, they finally released crime scene photos 20 years later to People magazine.
Oh, okay. I did see that. Yeah, I did see that photo. Okay.
So did you see the BMW? So I am terrible with cars. But I'm sure it was probably a pretty newer one back then.
Yeah, it does. It definitely looks like a somewhat modern one. I see here. Yeah. So to me, it looks like late 80s or early 90s. So not, you know, BMW is known for kind of being a hoity-toity car, mm-hmm. expensive. So this, I don't know, it's just a little hard for me to believe that robbery is the motive. I guess that's what I'm getting at. You know, this person driving a BMW, probably not in desperate need of money. The initial interaction seems very peculiar. I assume Jody rolled down the window to talk to someone who approached, you know, this man.
I just wouldn't see her doing that. I mean, I always thought maybe the window was already rolled down, but no, maybe that makes, I never, it makes sense. Maybe she, but then that would only mean that she knew the person, because she would, if somebody walked up to her car, I just don't see her talking to a stranger in the middle of the night.
And so was she driving away from the person when she was shot?
It's never been, I don't know that, can they tell that by the way the bullet went in?
I mean, what's confusing to me is the angle. Like if they're having a conversation, which I, again, I kind of assume that's the beginning of this, probably at mm-hmm. the window, which is sort of a straight on, situation, face to face, at least a little more direct, because the bullet came through the back window, broke the back,
or the back door,
the back door window,
behind her.
Right?
Yeah. Or the door, yeah.
Okay. And then through her, the seat that she was sitting on, the driver's seat, and then mm-hmm. into her back. So that's,
right.
Like, that's not, that didn't happen while they were conversing at the window, if that's actually
right.
what happened.
Right. And if he was going to rob her and her window was down and they're having a conversation, why wouldn't he just put the gun to her, you know, if the window's down, and say, give me your purse? Why go through all of that with witnesses around and things like that, right?
I suppose that could have happened, and then she tried to drive away, and then he fired.
Mm.
Did it break the window, the back window? Or the door behind the driver's seat, that window?
I don't know.
Okay. It's a bit hard to picture, but so I'm looking at this the crime scene photo of Jody's car after the shooting, and there's kind of like a blanket over
both
doors.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was trying to find.
Okay. So it seems to me that she kind of noticed some or sensed some danger, and I think she might have been driving away when this happened. Maybe just the adrenaline and shock is running through her body is what allowed her to continue driving into a different parking lot. What's especially bizarre too is this guy follows her, and you said it's not like he was doing it in any particular hurry.
Correct.
And then he reached into her car and put it in park?
Yes, that's what they said. Yes.
Wow. And
I mean, if they're that close to see that.
And then grabbed her purse. And we talked before we started here. It seems to me like maybe he was trying to make it look like it was a robbery, but potentially not the initial motive.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's been so many theories. There's been people saying maybe it's a hit. I'm constantly in my mind going through different scenarios and would you think it's random?
I think there's a good possibility it's random because of I know there is some gang violence in Baltimore, and I know it sounds like it's from the movies, but occasionally there is initiations that are murders, and that's how you get into a gang, and that would be completely random and make it very difficult to solve. But there are some other pieces too in play that would lead me to think that it could be some kind of planned attack. But it doesn't sound like this guy was a professional hitman or anything like that. If this was a hit at all,
right.
So yeah, maybe it was just an opportunity.
I mean, she died on the city county line, so she died right there. So it was where it happened was a real shock. It's not like the city where there's murders all the time, right?
Yeah. So that area wasn't necessarily a bad area, wasn't known for gang violence.
Correct. But that's not to say that, as you're saying that, somebody wasn't just driving, but what's sure. somebody doing in the middle of the night? I mean, driving around in a BMW, it's hard to.
Now, what about the bar patrons? Was that description of Jody's killer, was that familiar to the bar patrons?
No. And I don't know how much the police investigated with as far as the people at the bar. They had a media night. I mean, it was a small, I feel like everybody kind of knew each other there. And the bartenders, I mean, they'd been there for a long time, and they had media night on Thursday nights and or Friday, the night Friday. I guess it was Friday. They had a media night. And so Jody ended up talking with, there's a cameraman in Baltimore for one of the news stations. And I was doing an interview several years ago, and he said, I talked to Jody for a while that night before she died.
Oh, no way.
Sitting at the bar. Yeah. And I said, did you get interviewed by the police? He's like, no. So, I mean, there's just been so many instances like that. And I thought, even if he didn't know anything, wouldn't they have figured out who she was sitting at the bar talking to? I mean, for longer than 15 minutes or so. I mean, the bar, she's sitting there in the one spot. It's just odd to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That, I mean, they know these people in here. I mean, I'm sure the same news people, reporters, it's just things like that is really frustrating to me, that I feel that they haven't done a thorough investigation with many things that I have seen.
So you're saying the media night was to try to raise awareness
Well, I mean, that's just something that they would sponsor different things at the bar. I mean, it was just a separate thing. It had nothing to do with anything. It was you know, it was just saying. And my point was, is like he was at the bar talking to her.
Right.
And it seems to me like they would have figured out everybody she was talking to. I mean, and she said, I thought it was like at least 15 minutes or so. I mean, that would have seems like the bartenders, you know, she's sitting there. Would have been like, oh yeah, we saw her talking to such and such with WBAL, or you know what I mean? It just
interesting. I guess I misunderstood when you said media night. So this was a this happened the night she was killed.
Yes.
And and so there were people there who weren't typically there, I guess, because they were trying to bring in a new crowd, or at least different kind of people.
Well, I think that they did regularly do this media night. Okay. So that's sort of my point, is they would know these, you know, they know the Baltimore, they know there's several Baltimore stations, the reporters and the cameramen, you know, they come in. So I would think that the bartender would have said, oh, Jody was talking to such and such, right?
Yeah.
Like the police would have come in, but it's, you know, I mean, I've found a few people that they told me that they interviewed that they hadn't. Other people. And it's baffling to me. I mean, I told you about the one person that was a main, you know, person of interest. And then there was another one, and I'd ask the detective, we'd go back and forth about it. And when I started asking questions and asking him about this person, he'd say, oh, I don't believe I ever interviewed him. I'm like, what?
Oh my.
Like, it was just like shocking. I mean, the answers that I would get, I was like, really? You didn't interview a main person of interest? And he said, oh, you know, then over time, I mean, there was just so many things. Well, he wasn't associated with firearms. And if you Google his name, I mean, he's arrested for a gazillion firearms. I mean, it's.
Oh, really?
It's so maddening. Like, and there's so many stories like that.
Tell me about this prisoner that you said you have been speaking with.
I have been talking to, prior to the lawsuit, just to the police about, I'm trying to say it without getting myself in trouble.
Sure.
This person, I believe, really, they believe, I believe, you know, possibly knows a lot. And I'd say, why don't you bring me in there and talk to him? The detective was like, why would he want to talk to you? And I was like, well, fuck you. Fuck you. So I went home and wrote him a letter. And I didn't mean to do that, but I get so angry, like, because I'm like 20 something years later, and like, let's, you know, I'm just, my mind, I'm up. I never sleep. I'm like, why don't I, you know, I'm constantly thinking of things to do.
Yeah,
and so
imagine,
I just started writing and communicating, and, you know, I was going to go visit this person, and just really kind of started to get involved. And my husband found out, and he was very upset, and not involved with it, but, you know, just the writing and some phone calls, and it just, he's like, you're putting our family in danger. And I'm trying to be like very cryptic, because I know I can't say a lot, but it's just somebody that I think needs a lot more attention to. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And that's why I do. I mean, but that's the sad thing is, you know, I went from this person that was a basket case, anxiety, like sleeping with my mother, to this person that's driving into Baltimore, meeting with people, communicating with a prisoner. Like, I got to the point where I just didn't care anymore. I was like, I don't care if somebody, that's how desperate I got. I was like, I don't care if somebody shoots me. I don't care. Like, I'm going to find out what happened to her. And that's like how crazy I got.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's that's definitely not worth risking your safety.
I know. Yeah. I know. And it's like, so my husband was like, what are you doing? You know? And this was about a year ago over a year ago. I'm trying to think of all the timeline. I might have suggested to the detectives it might have been after the lawsuit went with one of our meetings. I just can't remember. But it was like last year that I started communicating with him. And I opened up a P.O. box, like a mailbox. And I would, you know, and I'm like going in to check and I just was doing things that weren't good. You know, yeah. I've gone, like I said, to visit people, you know, I just.
You've gone to prison to visit him?
I would have, but I had to be on the list. And that's what I was asking. I mean, we were having correspondence, but so he needed my address. And
I just
couldn't get to that part. You know, I just didn't want to give my address, although that somebody could probably find it online.
What about a P.O. box? Did you think about starting one of those?
See, it has to match your driver's license.
Oh, I see.
But I did have the P.O. box for the letters.
Yeah.
And I really had to. I mean, that's the thing. I feel like I've turned into a crazy person because I'm so desperate. And it's like, you know, if the police, I feel, had done their job, I wouldn't be, you know, going through all this, you know. I mean, all this money my family's had to put, all this depression and anxiety and stress on the family. And
I'm so sorry.
You know, and people have said to me, you know, why are you doing this? It's killing you. And I'm like, how can I not? You know, how can I not?
No, I think you should be doing this. I think it was probably killing you more to not do anything. And even though you weren't like actively feeling it, maybe, you know, it doesn't mean it didn't have a great effect inside.
Right, right.
Do you still correspond with this prisoner?
I stopped. I reached out to one of his family members that I had found, and that sort of all of a sudden, like, communication went to a halt. It's hard. I can tell you off the record, but so I don't know what's going on.
But I guess what I'm getting at is, do you think that this prisoner is looking for early release, or do you think this is someone who actually has some knowledge of what happened to your sister?
Absolutely. I believe has knowledge. Yes.
Okay. Well, that's definitely great to hear. Well, that's inspiring and great to hear.
Yes, 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 yes. Would I do it? Would I communicate again? Yes. Would I go there? Yes. But I'm not sure what's going on since I've communicated with this family member, and it's like the communication stopped.
Speculating a bit, that person might have told this inmate to not correspond. That's where your head's at?
Something. Yeah, something's gone on. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I can't pinpoint it.
Well, that's really interesting. Are you working with any private investigators now?
Not now. No. Not. I mean, because I don't have any. I'm wishing I could get an investigative journalist, you know, some type of thing where, you know, where these people, you guys should do this.
Yeah.
Try to solve the case, you know, like dig into it. You know, you hear these stories.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely, I'm curious what this prisoner has to say. And I think someone should interview him. If the police aren't going to, then a private investigator should go there and interview this person. And
you can go with me.
Yeah, I would love to.
Oh my God.
I would love to. I'm not a private investigator. I'm just a podcast investigator. But it would be nice for a professional to do it and to take down, you know, to ask the right questions. Because I think, you know, we can ask questions that we're interested in knowing the answers to, but they might not necessarily be the appropriate questions.
Right. Right. I feel like I need to continually be doing something on her case. And if I feel like I'm running out of options, then I get really upset.
All right. Well, let's put the call out there to the audience. I mean, if there are any licensed private investigators out there, call, you know, email us and we can connect you to Jenny, because I think you need the help of a professional. And if you're not working with one right now, is a chance that someone is listening who might be able to help someone in that area. And, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're still in Maryland, right?
Yes. And yes. On the Eastern Shore.
And is that where the prison is too, in that area?
In Maryland. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So someone from that region would be great to help and to possibly interview this person on your behalf and turn that over to law enforcement. And maybe that can help there. At least we can, you know, if that doesn't work, we could at least take it a step further. in publicizing what that person has to say if the police aren't going to do anything. Look, we're here to help.
You're
inspiring.
And I'm obsessed with you guys. I'm like, I want
to. Well, I'm, you know, to be honest, I'm obsessed with people like you, and you mentioned Sarah Turney earlier. We can't get enough of people who are pushing like you, and it's inspiring to us. It honestly keeps us going, you know, and that might
awesome.
Be the opposite way of the way you thought about it, but that's the truth.
That's awesome. Well, she's my hero. I don't think I've told her enough, but like, she's like, and I don't get to talk to her. You know, we've communicated a little bit, and I love her just spirit. I just love everything. Like, she's a badass.
Yeah, she is.
And she's a badass. Yep. And but you guys are like, I know, I just like, I see you guys all over, and I was like, oh my God, I want to like hang out with them. So you got to keep me posted, because I'm going to come hang out with you and Lance and Sarah.
Yeah,
and whoever
definitely.
Else.
Yeah, we may be having our own event not too far from where you are later this year. So I will definitely keep you informed about that. And it would be great to meet you. I feel like I know you already.
I know. But you've been so kind, because I'll tell your audience, I was harassing you guys. I'm like, please. I was like, I want to be on the Crawl Space pod. I want to be on their podcast.
Well,
I just sent you the petition.
Okay, great. And yeah, there are links in the show notes. So please sign the petition. And please, if you know any private investigators, or if you are a private investigator in that region, please reach out to us. We can connect you to Jenny and see if we can make this interview of this inmate happen.
And there's a $100,000 reward that we have as well for the rest in conviction. I'm going to send you a copy of that poster. You've seen it.
Yes. Okay. So that's great, though. I did have that on my list of questions. So $100,000 for arrest and conviction.
Correct.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a pretty penny, and that could definitely help a lot of people out there. And obviously someone knows something, and unfortunately probably not those eyewitnesses, because it would have led somewhere, but they at least gave a pretty solid description. And it sounds like it was a pretty similar description, which I think can be a problem with eyewitness, reports, but this one seems similar across the board.
Thank you so much, Tim.
Thank you, Jenny. I really appreciate it.
Oh no, I very much appreciate it. And, I'm looking forward to hearing this. I'm sending you the reward now of the reward, the one of the billboards now.
Okay.
And if anybody has any ideas of my next billboard, I'm taking ideas too.
Okay, great. And is there a direct email address you want us to put out there?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So it's, J Carreri. So it's just Carrier with an I, that's how you spell Carreri, at goeaston.net. GOEASTON.net.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. And that email address will be in the show notes too. So if you are that private investigator, please reach out to Jenny, or you can reach out to us and we will connect you.